This New York Times podcast is sponsored by Symantec, bringing you confidence in a connected world.
It's the Science Times podcast for Tuesday, August 21st. I'm David Corcoran of the New York Times. This week, a magician talks about fooling the brain, a therapist talks about judging your therapy, and a columnist talks about climbing Everest. Our lead story in Science Times this week is way out of our usual territory, an essay by science writer George Johnson about magic and the conscious mind. George went to Las Vegas for a neuroscience conference, and one of the subjects was the power of illusion. The scientists invited several magicians to perform and speak, and I spoke with one of those magicians, Teller, from the team of Penn and Teller. Teller, our lead story this week is about magic and consciousness. What does one have to do with the other?
One of the things that magicians do is they exploit the way you experience the world to make you mis-experience the world for a little while, just for fun. And so magicians are acquainted with certain kinds of perceptions and behaviors that these scientists found rivetingly interesting. To me, they're the most everyday kinds of operations. I'll give you an example. This is one that I talked about at the conference. Magicians exploit the fact that when you see an action happen, and then you see that action apparently repeated, you have learned to assume that the second performance of the action is done in the same way that the first was done. But this is something magicians exploit ruthlessly. So if they want to make something appear to vanish while it's in the air, first they'll throw it up in the air so that your eye follows it, and then they'll throw it up in the air again so that your eye follows it, and then they'll make an exact duplicate of that motion, but dump the object in some secret location as they apparently throw it in the air a third time, and your brain misfires. Your brain has now decided that when you make this gesture of throwing, the object is going up into the air. And you will actually get people saying, I saw that disappear in the middle of the air, even though they didn't. And that kind of phenomenon, I guess, is kind of interesting to the scientists who are studying consciousness.
Yes. What did they tell you about how the brain works when somebody observes an illusion like that?
Honestly, they were picking our brains rather than teaching us. They told us some of the experiments that they had done, particularly the sequence of experiments that was just out in Scientific American, in which essentially they pretty much proved that if you stare absolutely without any eye movement at an object, if you restrain the eye from being able to move those little tiny little microsaccades that you do when you're staring at a single object, that object will effectively disappear from your brain. That's the big thing I learned from them. And it's not exactly something I think I would be able to use in performance. But I thought it was fascinating to think that it's only by continuous movement that the brain's information is refreshed.
Without giving anything away, can you describe...
Oh, I don't care.
Okay. So can you describe an illusion that you do that illustrates the business about how repetition commands our attention, our perception to act in a certain way?
There are two that come to mind. One is a trick that I actually do in our current show, in which I appear to transform handfuls of water into coins, and the coins keep coming and coming and coming. And again, I reach into a plain fishbowl full of water, and I keep pulling out sometimes single coins, sometimes multiple coins, and dropping them into a bowl that's being held by an audience member. And it appears to be a series of repetitions of various kinds of complexity. But as you watch the repetitions, I am allowing you to get glimpses of my empty hand when my hand actually is empty. And other times, I'm not allowing you to get glimpses of my empty hand because it's no longer empty. So I'm using a multiplicity of sources to obtain those coins that all appear to be coming from the same source.
But the brain of your observer has imposed a sort of pattern, and so it's expecting to see an empty hand every time.
Yeah, it's kind of like montage in the movies. The brain sees an empty hand. I mean, the observer, I can't speak to brain science, but the observer sees an empty hand one time, and he sees it a second time. And now the third time when that hand reaches in, he's going to assume that that hand is still empty because he's learned that from the previous times. In a certain way, you're teaching the audience, you teach the audience what to look for, then you show them what they're looking for, and then you violate all of those implicit agreements.
So assumption is a magician's best friend.
It can be. It can be. You know, the famous trick, which I won't explain, but that I believe every single human being, and certainly every human being over the age of 10 in the United States has had one in his house, is the famous linking ring trick, which is a wonderful, wonderful piece of magical psychology. It appears to be a group of 8 solid and separate rings that become linked and unlinked mysteriously. And the trick is done by 3 or 4 different methods all combined to give the impression that the rings are linked. But by the time, let's say, 2 rings are handed out, they're indisputably solid. Then a little later, you see 2 rings linked, and they're indisputably solid. And the assumption you make is that those happen to be the same rings. Well, I don't know if that's a completely safe assumption, but that's the assumption we'd like you to make.
Teller is the smaller and quieter half of the team Penn and Teller. He performs in Las Vegas, where he performed for our essayist, George Johnson. Teller, many thanks for being with us.
Thank you.